So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Why are so many men giving up on college, and are women doomed to marry beneath them because of this? I'll discuss that and more on Trending, including continuing our virtue series on the cardinal virtue of fortitude. We'll talk about building endurance in our lives, in our spiritual life, in our spiritual walk. We'll be inspired by St. Paul in particular. You're listening to Trending with Timory. I'm Timory, and I want to dive into some very important topics today. You may have heard that just one statistic to touch on this, that in England, over the last few years, there has been a 4,000% increase in adolescent girls transitioning to boys. That is, identifying as transgender. A 4,000% increase. This just barely scratches the surface of trends we're seeing all over the developing world. Now, I was watching a video earlier today of a young woman in Canada who recently, seems like over COVID, has suddenly decided that she is no longer Stephanie, but will now go by Stephen. And she's determined that she's a boy. She shared that in April of this year, actually, I take that back. In March of this year, she started taking cross-sex hormones. And this summer, in July, she went for top surgery, so-called gender affirmation surgery, sexual reassignment, whatever you want to call it. Well, she went for the top half, not the bottom half, because she's a lady. So if you have to chop more off if you are a female wanting to have work done. And I'm sorry to be blunt, but that is actually what's happening. Bodily mutilation and chemical altering of a body with long-term side effects and consequences, many of which we know next to nothing about. I'll share with you more about that and some of the side effects of taking cross-sex hormones, of taking testosterone if you're a woman. But here's what's interesting to me. As I've been following the story of this woman, Stephen, on her Instagram profile, because she is a lady, and I will refer to her as a she because it's a lie to call her a he, even though she identifies as Stephen now. So here's the deal. She proclaims on her Instagram profile that she is autistic, disabled, and identifies as transgender. Now, it's fascinating looking at photos because just 2 years ago, she had long hair. Beautiful human being. She was a huge advocate for ending fishing in the ocean. In fact, was involved in massive campaigns to stop any type of fishing in the ocean, to save the fish. Now, this year, she determined that she was going to medically transition. Again, in March, she started the cross-sex hormone therapy with receiving testosterone. And then, this July, she ended up having top surgery. She even has photos posted on her Instagram with other people, specifically women, who are also going through the same exact transition as she. In fact, she took a photo with her, quote, trans bro, that is another woman who's also now identifying as a boy and taking cross-sex hormones and doing other things to mutilate the body. And in this post, she made a comment along the lines of, since we took this photo, we're both 5 chin hairs more since we were together in this. 5 chin hairs more. Why would they be 5 chin hairs more? Well, one of the side effects of taking cross-sex hormones, taking testosterone as a woman, is that fat redistributes. Hair starts to grow in places that it wouldn't otherwise grow. And then she went through this transition and she had top surgery. And she actually posted a lot of photos of herself before and after online. And my heart was breaking looking at these photos. There was this moment when I kind of just hit this wall. And I was thinking about as I'm looking at this photo that she's posted of herself shirtless, nothing on up top because she's chopped everything off. She's been reassigned, quote unquote. I'm looking at her stomach, and it sounds really odd. I don't know how else to put it. Her stomach was beautiful. And I kept thinking about, why is it that we tend to cloak our stomach? Why is there an idea of modesty within our culture for women when it comes to stomach? Because the stomach is the womb. The stomach is the place that carries and houses children. And I kept thinking, her stomach is beautiful because it has the potential of that safe haven, that capacity to carry and nourish human life. Even her upper body, the chest, has the capacity to nourish children through nursing. And Grant, she may be someone who didn't want to have children, wasn't going to have children. Not everyone has children. Not everyone nurses. But what was sorrowful to me was to see this bodily mutilation of her body and this outright rejection of her body and the great gift that it is and its capacity and potential for new life. This is part of what is so beautiful about a woman's body. And what stuck out to me when I was looking at her body, because we know objectively women are beautiful. But even me as a female looking at this woman's body, seeing her, I'm like, there's something so beautiful there about who she is. And here we are, we're allowing the beauty of who we are written all the way down into the way our body is constructed. The potential for our bodies to be destroyed. We're allowing that to happen day after day, and it is absolutely heartbreaking. I want to tell you the truth about what happens when someone engages in cross-sex hormones. Just a little testosterone, as we might say. So-called hormone replacement therapy. Gender affirmation medical care, as some people refer to it. But first, I want you to listen to Stephanie. As she goes through from the first day that she started taking testosterone until the fifth month. Listen to the change in her voice. There's a difference. Do you know that taking cross-sex hormones actually changes your voice? Listen to this.
My name is Steven, and I am 1 day on testosterone. 1 month on testosterone. 2 months on testosterone. 3 months on testosterone. 4 months on testosterone. I'm Steven, and I'm 5 months on testosterone.
So this is a young woman who's been taking cross-sex hormones and now identifies as transgender. I want you to listen one more time. We're going to play it again. And I want you to just notice the difference in her voice that continues to happen because she's been on testosterone for a while. Now, something she noticed is that I think within about a month, by the time she hit the end of April, which puts her at just past a month of taking cross-sex hormones of testosterone as a female, well, she actually said that the doctor, when retesting her levels, actually said that she was already in the range for a biological male. Isn't that interesting? So she was pumping so much testosterone into her body that after a month, she was in a normal range for a biological male. That's how much testosterone she had in her body within a month. So then what happens month after month as this testosterone level continues to increase and become the norm in her daily hormonal makeup? Well, again, listen to this development that she actually chronicled on Instagram.
My name is Steven, and I am 1 day on testosterone. 1 month on testosterone. 2 months on testosterone. 3 months on testosterone. 4 months on testosterone. I'm Steven, and I am 5 months on testosterone.
So what happens when you start taking testosterone as a woman? Or let me add that we're actually giving testosterone to children who identify as transgender. Children who are prepubescent, who haven't even gone through puberty. Well, here are some of the so-called positive things that occur. Number one, you start taking testosterone, it actually gives you a sense of euphoria. Now, for someone who's struggling with anything from anxiety, depression, discomfort in your own body, euphoria sounds really nice. It's one of the side effects of taking testosterone. It also helps to suppress anxiety. Now, this is key because we know, as I've discussed here on the show, that groups of girls are coming out with their friends as transgender, and they're starting to take cross-sex hormones together. Well, a lot of these girls are girls that would commonly struggle with various eating disorders, feel like social outcasts, like they don't fit in, be struggling with, again, anxiety, depression, any number of things. So to suddenly have this suppression of your anxiety by taking testosterone, of course you feel great when you start taking it. Of course you feel, quote, more like yourself because you're not having anxiety. The anxiety, in a certain sense, is being treated, although not correctly, and with many other side effects that we'll discuss in a moment. Some of the other things that occur when you start taking testosterone, great. Honestly, I think most women would welcome this in some ways. Their period goes away. There's also this redistribution of fat that they greatly appreciate, especially if you are rejecting your body, having a hard time accepting your body, don't like certain parts of your body. Well, your fat's redistributed with testosterone. Girls want to tell everyone how great they feel when they're on testosterone. Why? Well, part of taking testosterone is you feel braver and socially bolder, and you want to share that. There are actually these masculine characteristics that begin to increase in women who take testosterone as cross-sex hormones that is more masculine type of trait. But do we talk about the negative side effects? Because we see a lot of the positive. Girls who identify as transgender saying, my anxiety went away, I feel euphoric, I no longer have periods, my fat has redistributed, I'm accepting my body better. And I want to tell everyone all about this. Maybe this person has a little more confidence than some of you see before. You think, wow, geez, maybe she did need to come out as the opposite sex. Maybe this is really herself. No, it's not. This is an artificial, chemically altered self. What we're saying, if we start to affirm cross-sex hormone replacement, is that I like you, but I like you for a chemically altered self. Or it's like saying, I like myself, but I only like myself as chemically altered. Now, what are some of the negative side effects? One, infertility. Which, by the way, sometimes due to just cross-sex hormones, I'm not even talking about sex reassignment surgeries, mutilation, whatever you want to call it, just a result of long-term testosterone use. Doesn't even have to be that long, by the way. Some women end up needing hysterectomies because the body starts being damaged. There's actually a high risk of heart attack. There's body and facial hair that begins to grow in other areas that normally we'd hope wouldn't grow on us women. But, I mean, we don't always have that benefit, right? There starts to be uterine cramping that is extremely severe. The body's thrown into utter shock and confusion. So while there are great benefits in some ways, there are also negative side effects. But here's the deal. We don't even have a clue as to the full range of negative side effects. Why? Because number one, there's no clear oversight when it comes to testosterone hormonal replacement. Now, sometimes, often, there is blood work that's done to retest for the sake of seeing, are you within a range of where you want to be because you now identify as a man? There's no oversight or regulation of this otherwise. It's just on a whim what you desire and what you're working toward. There's no knowledge of any long-term studies or effects from having gone through cross-sex hormone replacement therapy. And I'm talking about long-term study and effects. I'm not just talking medically. I'm talking emotionally, psychologically. There are no long-term effects being monitored. We're not even talking long-term effects when it comes to suicide. And by the way, the little bit we do know is that when people go through these transitions, within about 7 to 10 years, they regret it. Originally, when someone goes through cross-sex hormone replacement therapy or a sex change, often they have this state of euphoria I've been mentioning. It's part of the chemical alteration. They want to share about it. Their anxiety's gone away. They feel better than they did before. But it's not long-term because you're doing something to the body that was not meant to be done. It's not a treatment to cure, it's a treatment to change. And it's a treatment to change that will continue to have to occur. Because that full change cannot actually happen. You can have a change in voice, a redistribution of fat, hair growing in places where I don't know why you'd want hair to grow there to begin with, ladies. But all of this brings us back to understanding that God doesn't make mistakes. God creates us male or female. And one of the greatest challenges of every single Christian, every single human being, is to come to not only know, love, and serve God, but to know and love ourselves and do justice to ourselves and the incredible creation God has intentionally created that He continuously loves. All of us have to work through overcoming our own sense of isolation, self-loathing, lack of confidence. And cross-sex hormone replacement therapy is not the way. Doesn't matter if your voice changes and that makes you feel more confident. Doesn't matter if it suppresses anxiety. God doesn't make mistakes, and we are not telling women or men the truth about this. And we need to speak up. And my heart actually breaks for this girl, because something else you should know, she says she is autistic and disabled as well. Disability can lead someone to feel extremely socially isolated, as can autism. Autism is also something we're seeing a trend within the transgender movement, that many young girls and women who experience autism are actually coming out as transgender, because they're trying to find some different means of socially adapting and overcoming the social isolation that they experience. They love the testosterone because it makes them bolder and feel more capable in social environments and circumstances. We're not doing a service to people with cross-sex hormone replacement therapy. It's important that we recognize that in every single instance that many psychologists end up working with people who struggle with gender dysphoria, that when we actually study it, they have other comorbidities. And when I say that, that means that they're not just struggling with their identity as a man or a woman. They're also struggling with anxiety. They're also struggling with autism, a disability, sexual abuse. They're struggling with other comorbidities at the same exact time, which means we shouldn't be just treating with cross-sex hormone replacement therapy with testosterone, because that may not actually be addressing the other comorbidities that need to be addressed and healed. Our goal and hope should be healing. Our goal and hope should be a knowledge of self, a love of the creation that God has created. And this is our role in society, to help anyone who truly is struggling with their identity, struggling with autism, with disability, social isolation, depression, anxiety, to help them. And understanding their value, the love God has for them, the capacity for greatness that they have, and the beauty of the creation that they themselves are. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ree here on Relevant Radio. I'll be back. We're going to kick into our virtue series on fortitude. We'll talk about having endurance. Do you have endurance? Also, why are so many young men giving up on college? And are women doomed to marry beneath them because of this? Don't go away. We'll be right back. Head over to relevantradio.com/trending to connect, subscribe, and follow me on social media. I'd love to hear from you and what you would like to hear discussed on the show. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ree on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Tomorrow's our weekly marriage hour here on Trending. You don't have to be married to be there. You just need to want to know more about marriage, be dating in a relationship, or want to be in one of those where it's all about dating relationships and orienting yourself toward the vocation of marriage and what the beauty of the Catholic Church's teaching is on that. Also, joining me tomorrow leading up to St. Padre Pio's feast day is Archbishop Corleone, who has an incredible story actually having to do with Padre Pio. So be sure to join me tomorrow on Trending. That's Thursday. Meantime, we're continuing to work through our virtue series on fortitude. Do you have endurance? How can you get some? Before we touch on that, I want to let you know that we're going to discuss why so many young men are giving up on college and whether or not women are, quote, doomed to marry below them. On that in a second. Virtue series that we've been doing, this is the fourth of the four cardinal virtues. If you have not been with us in this series, not too late. Head over to relevantradio.com/trending where you can subscribe. We've actually posted podcasts for each of the three virtues, that is prudence, justice, and temperance, already compiled. If you want to grow in virtue, if you want homework, practical things to do to understand what these virtues are and grow, please join us in this series and be sure to subscribe to the podcast there at relevantradio.com/trending, where you can connect on your favorite podcasting platform. Today, we're continuing to work through the virtue of fortitude as we will continue throughout the rest of the week. A simple explanation for fortitude is this idea of acting in the face of fear. Fear of difficulties. Fear of large difficulties, such as you're being called to be a martyr for your faith. Or other small difficulties where you anticipate something will be hard, and you do not want to do it as a result of that. In fact, St. Thomas Aquinas defines fortitude as it's chiefly about fear of difficult things that withdraw our will from following what's reasonable. I discussed earlier in the week how there's a trend in our culture of immobility due to difficulties. In other words, we don't make a decision because we anticipate difficulties. We don't even ask someone out on a date because you foresee the fact that you could be rejected or that person could break up with you. Or you don't even go on a date when someone asks you because you don't want to deal with a heartbreak that you've experienced in the past. You see, these anticipated difficulties that we then avoid the good things that could occur because of the potential difficulty and heartache and hardship that could occur. And so I mentioned this as a trend earlier this week in our series, so be sure to catch that because many of us have difficulties that we flag and therefore we avoid various things. Perhaps I avoid cleaning my house because I don't feel like sweating in the humidity while I vacuum. Now, that's a simple example. The reality is fortitude has to do with much more surrounding our moral life and the good that we can do, and should direct ourselves toward. St. Thomas Aquinas has also talked about how we have to find a balance with every virtue. Aristotle and St. Thomas Aquinas in the great tradition of the church has discussed how a virtue is somewhere in the middle between two extremes. So for example, fortitude is about fear and daring. Fear on one side and daring on the other. It has to curb fear and moderate daring. Because we don't want to be reckless on the daring side, and we don't want to become so fearful that we're timid and immobile and we don't act. So let's talk about this from the perspective today as we continue this series on fortitude, building throughout this week, about endurance. Do you have endurance? Aristotle says, the great philosopher Aristotle, that certain people are said to be brave chiefly because they endure affliction. Now we know bravery has to do with fortitude, that you act in the face of fear or in the face of perceived difficulties. So what Aristotle is saying is that people who are brave, people who have the virtue of fortitude, are known to be so because they endured the difficult things that got in their path. That doesn't mean that the fear of the difficulty went away. It means that they were willing to endure it. And think about this with me for just a moment. Think about this when St. Thomas Aquinas says this. To endure follows to suppress a fear. So enduring something follows suppressing a fear. Now, when I say suppressing a fear, we have to be careful because some people accuse Catholics of, well, you're just suppressing your passions and your desire for intimacy. You're just suppressing this. You're suppressing that. This has nothing to do with suppression. What this has to do with is not letting yourself be overcome by fear. Not letting the fear best you, but you best the fear. Think about it. Think of a physical opponent that I'm playing a game of checkers with. I can best my opponent and beat him. I can make a great move and kill a bunch of his little checkers, right? But what would that be called? A pawn? Pawn. We'll call it a pawn. And a checker? Do you call a checker a pawn? Okay, anyways, this is beside the point. Okay, so here's the reality. You may beat someone that you're playing checkers with, but the opponent is still there. Although you beat them, that doesn't mean that the opponent can no longer exists. So if I beat my sister in checkers, she still exists, she's still there. Well, similar with the idea of how St. Thomas Aquinas is saying, to endure follows the suppression of fear. To endure means to say that you addressed, you bested, you conquered your fear. Your fear was still there, but you didn't allow it to make you impotent. You didn't allow it to prevent you from moving, from taking action. You didn't allow it to suppress you because of whatever the anticipated difficulty is. Let's think about this in relation to the spiritual life. Because so often we think about making improvements in our life and we talk about virtue, and it is about the little things. But it's also about the big things. It's about our faith. It's about our spiritual journey. You may know this line from St. Paul in his second letter to Timothy, chapter 4. St. Paul is nearing the end of his life. He's been imprisoned multiple times. He's been shipwrecked. He's been beaten. So many terrible things. He has been on the cusp of death multiple times. But this time it's the end. And he's writing to Timothy. And he says, I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. What he's talking about is not just physical endurance, it's spiritual endurance. A toughness of mind and body, of soul, of the will's conformity to Christ, of overcoming all anticipated obstacles and difficulties because he is about to be martyred for the love of Jesus Christ. Right before he says this line, right before he says, I fought the good fight, I finished the race, I have kept the faith, St. Paul had just said, I am already on the point of being sacrificed. The time of departure has come. So St. Paul is preparing Timothy and is literally saying, I am about to be martyred for the faith that you and I believe in, for our Lord Jesus Christ, to be a defender of the gospel. And he said, I'm on the point of being sacrificed. The time has come. He's ready. He's about to give his life for our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. How was he able to get there? How did he have endurance? He had the virtue of fortitude. Acting in the face of fear, even to the point of death. Think about this in relation to an athlete. Maybe you want to increase your endurance. Maybe you're a runner. I am not a runner. Let me just say that again. I am not a runner. But there are a lot of things we can learn from runners about endurance. Or any type of fitness. Fill in the gap. There are different methodologies for increasing our endurance in physical activities. For example, there's the SAID principle, S-A-I-D. That's specific adaptation to impose demands. That is, you actually set a demand on yourself that you impose upon yourself and you adapt to it. So you build a state of endurance, let's say, and a certain threshold of how much weight you can lift, on how many miles you can run. You set the goal, you set the imposed demand, and you meet the need. Or, now, those are for those people who are, like, really hardcore and go from, like, not working out at all to suddenly, I'm going to work out 7 days a week. Okay? That's kind of a set of type of an example. Now, it would be more realistic and practical to say I'm going to work out 4 or 5 days a week. And that's my imposed demand. And I meet it. And you can build the endurance because you've set this demand on yourself. But you start with moderation. So you're saying, okay, I'm going to work out 4 days a week, 5 days a week, but only for 20 minutes. And this week, I'm so out of shape, I'm only going to walk for 20 minutes every day. And then next week, I'm going to start going to the gym. But I'm not going to go for all 4 of those days. I'm going to go to the gym one day, walk the second day, go to the gym the third day, and walk the fourth day. You're building up your endurance so that a few weeks from now, a month from now, you could actually go to the gym every single day and get your butt kicked and actually start to lose weight, feel better, feel more mobile, have more energy, start getting those endorphins that make you feel happier. Then there's also the gradual approach to building up endurance. Let's say that I'm going to run. God forbid I never would, okay? I'm just telling you, like, this would be torture for me. But let's say I'm going to run 20 miles. Okay, that's my goal, 20 miles. Well, right now, let's pretend I could actually run 10 miles. So I have to build up by 10 miles how far I can run. Well, there are multiple ways you can do this. You can start setting gradual goals. You increase your distance a little bit. You increase your speed a little bit. And you start to work on your timing. By working on distance, speed, and timing, you can gradually build your way all the way up to 20 miles and actually run faster than you did at 10 miles. All of these are examples of how we can build endurance. But for an athlete, you can make any type of approach you want. You can start trying to work toward becoming a runner. You could start trying to work toward exercising 4 or 5 days a week. But you can't do any of it if you don't have food, water, or sleep. Think about it. If you're not sleeping at all, you're not going to be able to go to the gym the next day. If you're not drinking any water, you're going to get dehydrated. You're going to pass out of heat stroke or dehydration. If you're not eating, you're going to make yourself very weak and you'll probably pass out. So what does this all have to do with the virtue of fortitude? Well, the person who has a virtue of fortitude is able to endure afflictions, to endure the difficulties anticipated and overcome them. And so if someone who's starting to work out and starting to build up the endurance of working out regularly, or someone who's building up toward running a 5K marathon, is slowly trying to increase their mileage, they can't do it without food, water, and sleep. They can't do it without gradual progressions or imposing expectations upon themselves. So here's my question. This is the homework for each of us. Because, of course, if we really want to grow in virtue, we have to do something about it. So do you want to grow in virtue? Do you want to grow in the cardinal virtue of fortitude? Number one, pray about it. Pray for this as a gift. It, by the way, is one of the 7 gifts of the Holy Spirit. So here's my question to ponder for homework. What does the necessity of food, water, and sleep equate to in the spiritual life? If you want to build up your endurance, to have the endurance that St. Paul had to the point where he was willing to be martyred, and he even wrote about it to his friend Timothy, where he said, I fought the good fight, I finished the race, I've kept the faith. He's endured the suffering, the pain, the rejection, the persecution, and he is already prepared to be a sacrifice, as he said in the verse just prior. He's right at the end. What does that equate to in our spiritual life? What do we need to help us endure? For us to gradually build? For us to meet the expectation of the imposed demands upon us, even in the face of the difficulties that we fear? We must go to confession at least once a month. We have to have a routine morning prayer, a night prayer that includes an examination of conscience, and our rosary. I would say that is our food, water, and sleep that builds endurance for us in the spiritual life. That builds and allows us to live out the virtue of fortitude, confession, morning prayer, night prayer with examination of conscience, and rosary. Confession minimum once a month. Now, I didn't include Mass in there because I assumed you were going to Sunday Mass. Do not try to be a St. Paul without receiving our Lord Jesus Christ, a body, blood, soul, and divinity. You can't do it. Food, water, sleep, what is that in the spiritual life? What will build endurance? What will lead to us being able to live out, potentially, if called to be martyrs, to give our life as a sacrificial offering? Only with the love of Christ, only by the blood of Christ. You need confession once a month, morning prayer, night prayer with examination of conscience, and the rosary. I think of another letter that St. Paul wrote to the Corinthians, where he said that one simple line, four words, that many of us know. Love endures all things. If we have love for Christ that is so profound, that we understand the great love and gift he has for us, the gift of human life of other human beings, that we are called to be charitable toward them, to love them, even in the face of difficulties, of our fears, we too may one day be able to imitate St. Paul and be able to endure all things in love, where we too might one day say, I fought the good fight, I finished the race, I've kept the faith. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. I will be right back talking about why are so many young men giving up on college and are women doomed because of this to marry below them.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Okay, here's the deal. Fewer men are going to college. Fewer people in general are going to college. And it's bringing up this question of, are women doomed to marry below them? I just about fell over. Can I just say this, gentlemen? Listen to me right now. When I heard that statement, are women doomed to marry below them because of education, I nearly fell over. Like, of course, that's dramatic, but I thought that was ridiculous. That is absolutely ridiculous to say no to someone, to not even allow them to be on your radar because you have a higher education, level of education than someone else. Okay, I'll come to that in a second. Let's first talk about why so many young men are giving up on college. And by the way, maybe you disagree with me. Please tell me why you would never date or marry someone with less education than you if you were a woman. Numbers 1-888-914-9149. Please call. I would love to hear your reasoning. And of course, there's the obvious, well, you think he may not make as much and so on. We'll talk about that in a bit. But really, if there's someone out there who would absolutely not marry someone if they didn't have either the same exact or more education than them as a woman, let me know. So why are so many young men giving up on college? This is fascinating. And I think that this is where we're starting to slowly see this explosion in the education scene. And I will say it is about time. Too many people are going into six-digit student loan debt because they are forced into the idea that they had to have a college education. They had to have a master's degree too. I think finally people are starting to see that universities are getting away with charging too much because we're subsidizing university education with student loans. And so there's been this huge fake demand for education. I know a lot of people, you do too, some of the kindest, brightest, most successful, and most lucrative people I know who have no college education. I also know some of the least successful, I'm sorry, deadbeat, dreary, and I won't say unintelligent, but that's rude, things, who have PhDs even. Or master's degrees, that's a little bit more of a norm, right? Least successful. Least moral sometimes. Who have very high level education. So why are so many young men giving up on college? Because they see this. Some people do fantastic after having gone to college, and it propels them in a particular direction. Other people do fantastic who never went to college, and it propels them in a great direction. Or some people only have a high school diploma, and they don't do well. Or some people have the opposite. You know, we see all of these circumstances. For some reason, in the 21st century, we put this cookie-cutter expectation on men, and it's not fair, it's not right, that all men not only have to have a bachelor's degree, but now they also have to have a master's degree in order to compete in the workforce. Now, Grant, unfortunately, in a lot of circumstances, that is the case where there's a tremendous amount of pressure to have a master's degree, to excel in the workforce, to have the job, to have the credentials after your name in certain fields. I think this all comes back to the fact that we're not expecting young people today to grow up and to actually have a plan when it comes to education. A lot of people are literally going to a four-year university that, let's just say, costs anywhere from $30,000 to $60,000 per year. And they're going in with no plan. They don't even care about what they're studying. Or maybe they're studying what they're studying because they couldn't test into what they actually wanted to study. The world has changed, and it has changed dramatically. This ideology about male education, this gender gap, this education gap, all of it is starting to come to a head. I think a lot of people, as I mentioned before, have debt regret. Their four-year degree, their master's degree didn't do anything for them. They're working in a totally different field. I know a lot of people who went to school and they can't even repeat a lick of something that they learned that they are implementing. Well, and Grant, that could be on their shoulders for not paying attention, for screwing off during college. But there is also the reality, for example, do you hear Google? Google's hiring, and Google's hiring people who do not have anything more than a high school education. That's right, they're hiring coders, among others. And by the way, do you know what coders make? Can I get a stat on that? I want to see that. Patrick's on it. I see him. He's already typing away before I even asked. What do coders make? I think that they very quickly make six figures. And I know a lot of coders personally who also, by the way, don't have high school education. Or sorry, more than a high school education. You know what's funny? I have a master's degree. Grant, I chose to study theology, okay? And let's be real. But I knew that if I wanted to be financially secure on my own, I needed something more. I went and got a certificate in Pilates training. And by the way, want to know something fascinating? I obtained the best possible Pilates certification level you can to work with special population, injuries, hip replacements, and not just fitness classes. You want to know who was in there doing their Pilates certification alongside me? Physical therapists, people with PhDs, and kinesthetics, and all of these different things. They were in there also getting their Pilates certification. It was fascinating to me to see that, and I didn't have that level of education in physical fitness. Grant, I had danced from the time I was 3 years old and taught dance classes. It's a physical education in and of itself. But isn't it fascinating that then I went on to teach at the same price level as someone who had not just a Pilates certification, but then also physical therapy education, other things? And it is just fascinating. I'm giving that as an example that there are a lot of incredible trades, certifications, and programs that don't demand that people go to a four-year university, let alone obtain a master's degree. And guess what? They can make just as much, if not more. All of this has to do with ambition, hard work, and yes, education, but not necessarily education in the traditional 21st century ideology of a 4-year high school diploma. And so this brings me to my next topic. And before I go there, I just want to say, if your kid's pondering whether or not to go to university, have serious conversations about it. Have high expectations. Encourage them, whether they go to university or not, to have a clear trajectory with what they want to do, to work hard, to not just go into student loan debt, to not just screw off when they go into university. I think that's really, really important. Taking a gap year is even a great idea. Now, for some people, I know people will say, well, you don't know my kid. If they take a gap year, they will never do anything with their life after. So then find a way that it's not a quote-unquote gap year, but a year of service. Put expectations on them. Maybe they do need that year to mature, to plan. Help them get a good job. We have to accommodate and work with people, but I think it doesn't start when it comes to the senior year and what's going to happen when they go away to university. It starts in high school with starting to develop skills, helping your children to see their skills, to see their gifts, to see where they might go and what direction, to already start having jobs and responsibilities, to have culpability and good work ethic. All of this doesn't start when someone applies to university and determines whether or not they're going to go. It starts in the way children are raised, the responsibility, the ethic of work, the gifts that we have, and those gifts being fostered early on. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. We're going to unpack then this question. More men are giving up on college, fewer men are going to college, does that leave women doomed to marry below them? Just a comment, Martha from Bakersfield, California, has a thought on this. Martha, what do you think about this gap?
Hi, yeah, I totally agree with you, Tamri. It doesn't really matter, you know, for a man to have a college education. I happen to be happily married to one of them. My husband does not hold a college certificate or a master's. But like you said, he has work ethic. He has commitment, and he's a hardworking man. And let me tell you, he makes more than I do. And I do work for a government office. So there's a very good example to that.
Yeah. And has your husband been able to provide for your family?
Most definitely.
Yeah, I think that this proves the point. You know, this brings us to, I think, the big idea. Are women doomed to marry below them if men don't have a college education or if a woman has more higher education than a man? You know, this is interesting because I looked at my husband and I said, I can't believe this is even a question. I never would have thought of it. I was scheduled and planned to go to graduate school before my husband was. My husband and I both have master's degrees in not for a second did I ever think, oh man, I can't date you because I'm going to get my master's. Or, oh man, you wouldn't be able to be a provider one day if you don't have your master's and I do. Yet, for some reason, culture is slating women to think that if a man doesn't have the same type of education or doesn't work in the type of field that is glamorous to them, they're below them. I've actually seen this with some of my friends, and actually what's fascinating is it's more so come from their parents than from them at times. And I don't know, I'm not saying that millennials or Gen Z are incredible and all the other generations are terrible. I'm not saying that because I know someone's going to say, well, you young whippersnappers. Oh no, I agree. There's plenty wrong with millennials and all of us. Plenty wrong. I talk about it all the time. But what I'm saying is I do notice that I would say Gen X and the boomer generation does have this expectation. You go to university, you maybe even get your master's degree, and you marry someone also with at least university education, a bachelor's degree. And there's also this kind of snobbery towards types of jobs. But then on the other end, you have all these millennials and Gen Zs who are saying, no thanks, I don't want a 4-year education. I'd love to work with my hands. I want to be a carpenter. I want to be a plumber. Oh, God forbid you want to be a plumber. God has given us the gift and the means and the necessity to have passion for things that are practical that make money. And that's good and okay. You don't have to be going out and saving the world by all of the numbers you're calculating with your calculator as an accountant. You don't have to go out and save the world by working for some philanthropic organization. You can actually save a lot of people, and it actually might be my case this weekend, that we need a plumber. A plumber to help continue to allow our lives to function as they ought with clean, sanitary water that isn't getting clogged up. Why do I say all of this? Because we have to overcome this class snobbery, this education snobbery that is occurring, that is leading some women to say that they won't date, they won't marry someone. I think that it's fascinating for us to even ponder, are women doomed to marry below them? Women aren't doomed to marry below them because of this gap in the number of men going to university. Roughly 6 women for every 4 men are enrolling in university as of this last year, and we're seeing this number only continue to decrease. Is that a bad thing for the future of marriage? No. You know what a bad thing for the future of marriage is? When we skirt responsibility, when we separate ourselves from God, when we say marriage doesn't matter, that's what leads to a huge gap when it comes to marriage and children and family. So let's cling to our faith, good work ethic, and the call God has given upon all of us to be good stewards of what we have.